So welcome to the latest episode of Your Stories Told Your Way, which is an opportunity for you, the listeners, to actually tell your stories about your famous ancestors, and I'll have a chat with you and add them as an episode on the podcast. This episode, I got to have a great conversation with Adrina and Barney Xavier, who tell me all about their ancestor, Asquith Xavier, who won a wonderful civil rights battle in the UK and helped to usher in the Race Relations Act, changing employment for all black people and minorities in Britain at the time. Just a quick warning, the language gets a little bit blue in this episode, and there are a few topics and racial epitaphs that are used that if you're not ready for younger children to listen to, just ask that perhaps right now you maybe get them to leave the room or put your headphones on. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode and I hope you enjoy the conversation. It certainly helped to educate me. So please kick back, relax, and enjoy the show.
I'm Ebony Xavier Cope.
And I'm Adrina Xavier.
And today we are talking about Asquith Xavier, my mum's uncle, my great uncle. No, he's not my great uncle, is he?
Your grand uncle.
My grand uncle.
Asquith Camille Xavier was my father's elder brother. My father is Ebony's grandfather.
Okay. So I came across Asquith at a presentation that you guys gave, and I just thought it was an amazing story that's worth sharing. So tell us about Asquith. What did he do? And what part did he play in like the world that we're living in today?
He came over as part of the Windrush generation, because he was told that England is his mother country, the streets are paved with gold.
Enoch Powell came to Dominica, and he was asking for the people in Dominica, and he went to most of the Caribbean, but he was in Dominica, and he was asking the Dominicans to go to England. Because the mother country, the script was, the mother country needs you. The script, the streets of London are paved with gold. You have to help the mother country. So everybody packed their suitcase, jumped on a boat, and came over here.
The politician who went to Dominica and invited the people to the UK was a Mr. John Enoch Powell, most famous for a speech titled Rivers of Blood, that he delivered whilst the Shadow Defence Secretary for the UK. I've found a very short clip and I'm going to play it now.
In this country, in 15 or 20 years' time, the black man will have the whip hand over the white man. Well, I can already hear the chorus of execration. How dare I say such a horrible thing? How dare I stir up trouble and inflame feelings by repeating such a conversation? My answer is that I do not have the right not to do so.
Okay, so now back to the interview.
But they came over here, they've got a frosty reception like the weather. And we couldn't get any housing. I came over here on the boat as well with my parents.
Okay, so you came over did you come over on the Windrush or?
No, Windrush was before me. I came here in 1963. Windrush was 1957, 58, around that time. Yeah, so we came over here on the boat. It took us 3.5 weeks to get over here. We landed at Southampton. And when we came over here, my mum said, how come the place is so dark? And why is there so much smoke? That was the chimneys from the houses. and the wow. smog was making the place dark.
Wow.
Anyway, we went to Paddington. Most of the Xavier family lived in Paddington. Even today, if you go to Paddington, a lot of the people over there are from St. Lucia and Dominica. So that was our area.
So when they came and they basically, they never left. They got there, they stayed there, they're still there. They're not going.
It's like that right across London when you actually look at it.
Yeah.
Like there are little pockets where, like, this is Jamaica, this is St. Lucia, this is St. Vincent, this is Barbados. And yeah. never so much as not really leaving, but a lot of people are getting pushed out now, I guess is the right word. Gentrification's coming, getting pushed out. Okay, so you guys arrived in Paddington, the ex-clan, the Xaviers, arrived in Paddington and took over with the rest of little Dominica. So yeah. when you got here, like, you know, kind of what happened? The reception was frosty, like the weather. What really took place then?
My father and his brother and sister came over here before me and my mum did. And they got a house. We rented a house. So Uncle Aswiv lived in the top floor. Then their sister lived on the next floor down. Mm-hmm. We lived on the next floor down. And another family member lived in the basement. That was in St. Stephen's Gardens in Paddington, in Notting Hill. Yeah, they were mansion houses. Mm-hmm. So they had the high ceilings and the high floorboards, the high skirting boards. So they're grand now. They weren't grand then.
Okay.
So we had, I think it was one room.
Yeah.
So we had one room, and it was my mum and dad, my two brothers, and myself. And then as soon as my mum came over here, she fell pregnant. She hadn't seen my dad for two and a half years.
The family grew quick.
Yes. It was a full stop after my sister, though. We came here November 1963, and my sister was born September 1964. So, you know, mum. Ma was pregnant, boy. But so it was the six of us in one room. My mum just bought a curtain, and this piece was the children's side, that piece was her side, and then there was another big piece, and that was the front room.
Wow.
So that's how it was. And we eventually moved, and we moved from St. Stephen Gardens and we got another place, but it was still the same one room. And we lived there until my dad got a job as a schoolkeeper and we got our own house.
You guys kind of had to...
Uncle Aswiv was... Yeah, go on, Royce.
Yeah. And so you were just about to talk about Uncle Aswiv.
He worked in the Wars ice cream factory at first. Until he got the job in the train station.
Okay, so he started working in the train station. So which train station did he work in, and how did he get the job, and how was it when he started? I mean, you said the reception in the country was frosty. Was he welcomed in on the trains?
Must be joking. I think he started off as a cleaner or a porter. He was working at Marylebone Station, and I think that time all the dignitaries used to come through Marylebone Station, and when they came through the station they would give them a day off because they didn't want no dark-skinned people be there when the Queen or the Queen family come to get their train to go wherever they're going. And he got fed up with that, and a job came up at Euston. And he applied for it, and they turned him down.
Wow.
And that's where the fight started.
Okay. So, you know, So why did they turn him down? And you're just about to say, and that's where the fight started. Like, why did they turn him down, and what happened after that point?
They never had no reason to turn him down. They were turning him down because he was black. Mm. And at that time, there was no people of color as a station guard welcoming, you know, like how the people are at the barriers now. Mm-hmm. They tell you to go to platform this and platform that and ask questions. Black people didn't do that at that time. Mm. Black people were just a cleaner. Or they would collect the cases to put on the trains, but they wouldn't have that important role to speak to the public. So when he applied for the job, he had all the qualifications that they asked for, but they still turned him down. I remember him saying to my mum, I'm going to fling my hand. And when I fling my hand, they'll see what I'm talking about. When he says fling his hand, he's going to write letters of complaint and he's going to take it further.
Okay, so flinging his hand didn't mean he was going to hit anybody. No attacking was taking place. He was going to use words rather than fists. The power of the pen.
So that's how all this thing came about.
Okay.
He got the job. But after he got the job, he was racially abused. He got a lot of threatening letters, threatening to kill him. He had to have police escort. And eventually he had to move house. And that's how he ended up in Chatham.
Oh, yeah. And his family are still in Chatham. Most of them are still in Chatham in Kent.
Okay. So they actually eventually would like, they had to move from Paddington, from, you know, the home that you'd come to, what, for safety?
Yeah. We moved from Paddington to Chelsea,
mm-hmm.
from place. And from there, that was temporary, and from there, they moved into Chatham. And they bought the house in Chatham.
Hmm. And so, you know, like, I think looking at it from today, especially from today's point of view, like, you look at the guards and the ticket inspectors and the people who help you on the platform, and if you've ever travelled in London, it is super multicultural. But going back to that time then, like, we are literally talking about a world, and it's not that far ago. I mean, what are we talking about? 66. Really? 66? 67, you know, England had what? Just won the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, what, 40, 50 years ago, not long ago. This is living memory here. And there were no, like, the black people were only allowed to be cleaners and there were no black guards. Like, I'm just trying to visualize a world where I wake up and I'm making my journey to work and I get to the train station or on the buses and there's no black people. I turn on the TV and there's no black people. I open up the newspaper and there's no black people. And as much as we're still kind of fighting that fight for representation now,
mm-hmm.
it almost blows my mind to think that there was a time when that of the beginning of that fight here in the UK, mm-hmm. because I think because of people like Asquith, I never had to grow up in that environment, not in London anyway. I never had to grow up in an environment where I didn't actually see people who look like me around me. I was born in Brixton. You know, everybody, my dad had a record shop in Brixton. Everybody I knew who was working was of color or Caribbean. There was mixture in the school. But it's funny to think that only a few years earlier that whole world just didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's quite a huge thing, and it's something you should be really proud of, because we talk about Rosa Parks in the US, what she did by sitting on a bus. But I think to some degree, like, what Asquith has done by taking action and what was the phrase you used? Throwing hands, yeah, right? No, by throwing his hand and using the power of the pen is almost just as important. I mean, after he kind of got his job and moved forward, did things change on the rails or was he the only one?
There was an Irishman.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the sign was no blacks, no dogs, no Irish.
Mm-hmm.
or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he, Uncle Asquith, was the Irishman was like his apprentice kind of thing.
Wow.
So he took the Irishman under his wing, trained him, because even though he was white, he was still classed as still Irish. Off.
Yeah, Irish people and black people, they joined together.
Mm.
Because the same way they wouldn't give us a room, they wouldn't give the Irish a room.
Mm.
Yeah, so they had a lot of problems as well. I think they came over here after the potato famine, around the same time as when we came over here.
And then, because of Uncle Asquith's fight, what was changed? The colour bar came into play, which is the act that says you cannot not give someone a job based on the colour of their skin. The
Race Relations Act.
Yeah, then from that we got the Race Relations Act.
So, again, so going back to what I'm saying, like, his act directly influenced the law. Like, and we can't kind of, we shouldn't really play that down, because once you change the law, that now means that, like, his act gave the rest of us and those who came after him the legal right to apply for these jobs and the expectation to get them as long as we are qualified.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, like I said, when we were talking earlier, I came across this story at a Black History presentation that you guys did. And I also saw you guys were featured on television as well, weren't you? You're on the BBC talking about this. How did that come about, and how did you find that experience?
I got a phone call from this woman saying that she wanted to interview me. So I got my back up. I said, look, who's this white woman calling me? I don't know where she wanted to interview. So I put the phone down on her and she called me back and said, oh, I think we were cut off. And then she started to explain. She got in touch with my cousin, Uncle Asquith's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She said, she told her to call my cousin Adrina. She knows more about it because she's around them times. I was.
Mum is like the Xavier family encyclopedia. She knows all things Xavier.
So they called you. The one show called you. You hung up. They called back.
Yeah, she called me back and we were talking. She explained that my cousin Sharon had given her my phone number. And she told me what she wanted to do and then wanted to meet up with us. So myself and a few of my cousins met up with her.
When she says cousins, she means Uncle Asquith's children.
No, mm-hmm. Auntie Aula's children as well.
Oh, okay. 50%.
Well, a few of the first cousins. It took us to a hotel in Chatham. Really nice hotel, 5-star treatment, and then they did the presentation on the show.
This next clip is just a short clip from the one show that was shown on the BBC where Adrina actually got to see a plaque honouring Asquith.
We've persuaded Network Rail to honour him permanently in the heart of the station.
I've got a little something, a little surprise to show you all. Do you want to pull back this curtain?
Oh, look.
So, yeah, this plaque is going to stand here now for your father's legacy.
No, you're welcome. Thank you.
Must be really emotional.
It's indescribable. When we came in there, I think it knocked us all aside.
I'm very happy today. I'm very pleased this happened.
Oh.
Thank you.
Asquith Xavier's fight helped to make all forms of discrimination in the workplace illegal. His is a name that we should all know.
So now, back to the interview.
And then when we got to Houston, we saw this big crowd of people. So I said to my cousin, oh, someone important's coming. Have you got your camera? Anyway, we're following the crowd now. And the woman says, can you just go around to the left? We went round to the left and we saw this black curtain.
Yeah.
So we stand up there thinking, what's going on? Then they pulled the curtain and it was my uncle's plaque. That was really fearful. But I remember all the things that he went through. How he used to have to run home from Euston. We used to live in Kentish Town. Mm. So he would leave Euston Station when he had his late shift. And there was no transport those times after certain times. So we'd have to walk from Euston Station to Kentish Town where we live.
Yeah.
And it just brought everything back.
And that's where Mum met the Irish apprentice. Irish
guy, yeah.
But you actually got to meet him.
Yeah, he came. I put his phone number somewhere as well.
Wow. And what was that like?
Well, when he saw the plaque as well, and he saw all of us, he was in tears because he said he couldn't get a job. And it was my uncle that took him under his wing and told him what to do, what to write, what to say, and then he got the job. And I think now he's a rep for the RMT.
Wow.
Royal, that Rail Women's Union.
So let me get this straight. So the apprentice who started, it wasn't just like the apprentice had to fight to be an apprentice, and then, you know, your uncle then had to coach him through and how to, and so what, he also had to write letters and so forth in order to get where he wanted to get to. It wasn't just a straight walk through.
No, it wasn't. No, he's Irish.
Mm. No blacks, no dogs, no Irish.
Yeah. The concept is still crazy. Even in today's world, we look at kind of the fight for rights that we're still going through to this day.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's changed.
You don't? So talk to me about that.
Mm-hmm. I think that
just say it as it is. You can edit it if you need to.
All right.
We're not editing anything. You just say it as you want to say it. Because that's the purpose of this. This is the whole point of this, is that we get to say what we think on our platforms, no edits, and it goes out as is. So yeah, say what you have to say.
All right. The way I see it is the same shit, different day.
Mm.
Only now they put in rose-colored glasses, say everything is fine, all multicultural, all interracial, and I think it's exactly the same as when I was 7.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think now,
when I was 7, you knew a white person didn't like you, so you didn't go, you didn't play with them, you didn't have anything to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
But now, certain people say yes, you know, like they'll play like they like you.
Mm.
They try to, it's like rose-colored glasses over the situation. That's how I see it.
What you're saying is it looks good, but it's not good.
Yeah.
And how about yourself, Abani?
I've seen it in my profession.
Okay.
So Barney is a school teacher.
Okay. And so what do you do?
I fight.
Okay.
But there comes a point where you just like, is there any point? You know?
Yeah, I totally know exactly what you mean. I mean, I've worked in several industries and several different jobs, and it was only maybe after the first 10 years of working that I looked back over my professions and realized I was the only senior black manager in each of the companies that I worked in for 10 years.
Yeah, I'm currently the only non-white member of staff
mm-hmm.
at my school. which I've never been that before.
Mm.
So for me, it was very foreign going into it.
Mm.
But it is what it is at the end of the day. If I want to progress, then there's going to be situations and there's going to be things that I'm going to, and because of the era I live in, there's going to be instances where I'm going to be the only black member of staff.
Mm.
But I'm not going to let it deter me from achieving what it is I want to achieve.
I understand. And Adrena, for yourself, like, you know, you grew up seeing all of this. How did that affect you as a young child? You know, as you must have been, what, around about 8 or 9 at the time when this started? How did this affect you how did this affect your childhood, seeing this and knowing that your uncle's going through this? Like, you guys were pretty much in the same house, in each other's lives all the time.
When I was younger, I'm gonna say it as it is, okay?
Go for it. I didn't have white people. Okay.
They couldn't talk to me, they couldn't breathe on me, they couldn't look at me. It's a fight.
Mm.
That's just how it was.
And is that because of what you saw your family go through, or what you went through?
What the family and myself went through.
Okay.
Tell them your story about love thy neighbor.
Oh, there's two stories. There's one time when we were coming from the doctors. It was myself, my mom just had my sister, my brother also. All of us would accept my dad. And my mum went to get a pill because she said she didn't want no more children.
Because
England was too hard. So she went to the doctor, and the doctor said, yes, you can get the pill, but here's a letter. Take this home and let your husband sign it. And if he signs it, then I can give you the pill. We cover up the doctor's surgery. And there's this white man following us. My mum started walking faster, so we started running behind her. And she got to the stage where, when she just not too long had a baby, so she got to say, well, she got tired. So she turned around and said to him, what do you want? And he says, oh, it's all right, love. I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to see your tail.
So pardon?
He just wanted to see our tails. He thought black people had tails, because that was what was said. When the black guys used to go to dances and pick a white woman to dance with, the white woman used to be filling up their bottom. And the black man is thinking, yes, the woman like me. No, wanted to see if you had a tail.
Wow. Wow. Sorry,
that threw you.
That did. Do you know what that did throw me? That threw me for a lot of reasons. Even brushing past the tail thing, but the fact that she didn't want to have any more children because the country was too hard. Like, to reach a point where you don't want to have children, you don't want to bring them into this world, says a lot about the environment and what you're going through. You know, when you just decide, nah, I can't bring children into this, that stopped me in my tracks. And the tail thing, I ain't even going there. I can't go there. You hear some, oh my, yes, please.
When we were in Dominica, when we went back to Dominica, my mum used to tell me about her little shop. So I was expecting to see this little ramshack, little shop.
Mm.
When we went to Dominica, she said to me, oh, that's my little shop there. I'm still looking for this ramshack little shop. I said, but Mike, I can't see no little shop. She said, look, it's in front of you. It was a supermarket, a big, massive supermarket. That was her little shop.
Wow.
And the house that we had, I've got a thing about arches. I don't know where I get it from, but every house I bought, I had to put an arch in there.
Yeah.
The house that we had in Dominica was a big, massive white house, and there was arches everywhere. No doors, just had an archway to go through to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. When we came to England, we're in a one room with curtains dividing the space. And my mum was a cleaner.
Yeah.
In Dominica, my dad worked on the ports as a customer excise officer and part-time maths tutor. And in England, they put him to work in a Wall's ice cream shop.
Hmm.
Well, no, Wall's ice cream factory. He used to make ice cream for us every Saturday in Dominica. Until he ended up being a caretaker. And these were professional people.
Yeah.
And that's what we came to England for. Streets of London are paved with gold. My mum said the only thing she see in London was dog shit everywhere. That was the only goal she see in London.
Wow. And there's so much I want to say, but I want to hear this other story. I want to make sure I get all these stories first. Like, so what was the other story?
Love Thy Neighbour.
Love Thy Neighbour.
Please.
Oh my God.
It's a TV programme.
You remember that?
Okay, so I've seen the show, and for those who haven't seen it, if I remember correctly, Love Thy Neighbor was a 60s, 70s sitcom about a black family and a white family who were next door neighbors, and the white family was really racist, and the black family were just really, I guess they were the loving. The other family was the neighbors, and I guess the black family were the loving, because it was groundbreaking at the time. I remember reading about it, but so when you say love Thy Neighbour, what were you in it, or did that happen?
Oh, I hated it. I hated that program. I was at school, and they used to call me Eddie because no one could remember Edrina.
Okay.
Too hard, them they said. So I was in primary school, and it was Eddie. We were making friends and everything. Just started to get used to being friends with white people because I had to mingle now.
Mm-hmm.
Went home, Love Thy Neighbour was on. And because it was a black family, black people on TV them times was a rarity. So everybody sit on watching Love Thy Neighbour. And you're hearing all these racist names that they call you on the street anyway.
Mm.
But it's on TV.
So, I was familiar with the show Love Thy Neighbour, or at least I thought I was. So once I'd finished my chat with Obani and Adrina, I decided to go and actually check it out to see what type of show it was. You know, sometimes our memories can play tricks on us. And so I found some clips from Love Thy Neighbour, and I'm going to play you some of what Adrina's talking about right now.
I wish to make a complaint against the Nignog. Equal rights does not entitle Nignogs to move next door.
I'm not frightened of Sambo.
You can't reason with a Sambo. You haven't got the intellect.
Of course he does. He's a Sambo. He's got a Sambo stomach. I'm white. I've got a good white British stomach. Sorry, love. Are you all right with Sambo? No good for me. Now, where were we, Sambo?
My name is Bill, not Sambo, right?
Charlie's a Scouse, Paddy's a Mick, and you're a Sambo. It's not your fault.
And so now we go back to the interview, and Adrina picks up from where she left off.
When I got to school the next day, no more Eddie. I was Black Sambo, Nignog. Oh my God, 21 fights in 1 week. They were going to expel me from school.
Wow.
They changed my name from Eddie to Cassius Clay. I hate that program.
It's funny you say that, because something similar happened when I was at school, and I never forget it. Like I went to school, and the school was the school had just converted from, well, it was an old grammar school, so it's quite hard to get into, and I'd got into the school. We had to fight to get me into the school anyway. I had the best exam results for the year. Like at my 11 plus, I had the best exam results for the year in the whole borough, right? And they still rejected me from the school. And I remember my mum fought to again, now I'm never going to forget that phrase now. She had to throw hands, right? To get me into the school. She wrote letters and so on. And she actually wound up being on the board of governors for the school because that's what my mother's like. And I never forget that one week, I think Roots came on British television.
Oh my God, that's another story.
Okay, right. And so up to this point, there was a few, I think there was maybe four or five of us black in my year, right? At least in my year group, right? And there was a couple in the year above and a few more in the year below. And everybody kind of mingled. You had the black kids and the Irish kids and the Indian kids and some white kids and so forth. But I never forget the day after Roots came on TV, you literally saw the color lines form. Like people who didn't talk to each other, everybody just formed up. And my history teacher, I won't say his name, but and he was also the head of year at the time. This is where you see the old colonial attitude come into play. It was almost like he was like, right, I need to quieten the natives. He kind of had that attitude. And I remember him coming out and giving a speech about a certain television show and then finishing the speech off by saying, and remember everybody, that it was Africans who sold you. And that was the end of it. The alarm bell rang and I was off the class. And we were like, what the hell? And a little bit like you're saying, like after that, everybody's name changed and fights broke out. And there were arguments and people who were friends before weren't friends anymore and all sorts. So now that you say it about things not changing, like I think we probably find that each generation has a similar story where some of these TV programs that come out that seem to do good are actually just reinforcing old stereotypes and handing them to new generations.
Yeah.
The divide and rule thing. That's how they do it every so often. They bring out these things.
Yeah, you'll be going on, getting on with your life, all happy, and then all of a sudden, and the latest epic slave drama comes on TV, and here we go again.
Yeah.
You've got your colleagues at work asking you, was it hard?
Yeah, oh, I love your hair. Can I touch your hair? Oh, your hair's so soft. Can I touch it? Your hair's so cool. Oh my gosh, Mitch, your hair's so cool.
So before this descends and goes somewhere I hadn't intended, I do just want to ask, like, so for people who are listening to this, Adrina, especially I want to ask you, like, you know, you went through your experiences in the UK, you saw your ancestor go through his experiences in the UK. What would you say to younger people coming up now?
I'm gonna come here. when I see adults from the Caribbean come up here and they're complaining, I always say to them, "Did you read any books? You don't know what England was like before you come up here. You had a choice." I didn't have no choice. When I came up here, it was on a boat and I was 3 and a half. I never had no choice. So shut up complaining because you knew what you was coming into.
All you can't hear must feel.
Yes. People they stay in their country and build up their country, they want to come here and make money. Yeah, make money, but make sure you have the intention to go back. Don't stay here till you're 99 and then you go back, and when you're 99 days, years and one day you die, you don't get to enjoy your country.
So Adrina and Abani, thank you both very, very, very much for your time.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you very much for your time. It's really appreciated.
So, that was Abani and Adrina Xavier sharing their story their way about their ancestor Asquith Xavier. And I really enjoyed that conversation. It raised so many issues that are probably going to stay with me for weeks and weeks and weeks. Racism, representation on television, the fact that Adrina's mother had to actually get a permission slip from her husband to get the pill, tales being on black men being a thing, all sorts of things raised up. But I'm very grateful that I got to have the conversation, and I hope that you enjoyed it, and the next episode will be coming along soon. So that's Your Stories Told Your Way. If you have a story that you would like to share, then you can please email me at blackhistorybuff777@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram at blackhistorybuff777, or on Facebook at blackhistorybuff777, Twitter by the same name. So please reach out, come and find me, DM me, share your stories your way, and we can have a great chat about it. So take care, and you'll hear from me all soon.